left off last week discussing the began to discuss and categorize some of the details of the three cardinal sins. So I want to finish that tonight, God willing, and then we'll move to some other subcategories also regarding the three cardinal sins. Tosfos has a certain outlook all over Shas regarding the three cardinal sins. And let us begin by analyzing from the perspective of the Gemara in Sanhedrin 9, Dalam and Aleph. The Gemara writes that there are three cardinal sins that one must give up one's life even in a private forum. If someone takes a gun to my head and says, commit adultery, idolatry, or murder, I have to let myself be killed by the person and not commit those three sins, even in a private forum. And the question is, why? So the Gemara lays down a marker for every one of the three sins. The first for Avodah Zarah is the Haftas Hashem Elokecha, the whole Levavacha, the whole Nafshecha, with all your soul. And if someone threatens me to engage in idolatry, I have to give up my life. The Gemara says the source is from that pasuk for idolatry. What is the source regarding murder? The source is, if someone takes a gun to my head and threatens that I should kill Mr. X, or he will kill me, I have to let myself be killed. Why? Because who says my blood is redder than his blood? It's a logic. It's svara. We learn it out through svara. And since it's logic, therefore that svara is good enough to tell me it did as well. And therefore I have to let myself be killed. And the Gemara says, what is the source regarding adultery? The Gemara says, because the Torah juxtaposes in the same pasuk, makes a hekesh between adultery and murder. And therefore, since the Torah puts them together in Parshas Ki Tetzé, the same din that applies to adultery, the same din rather that applies to murder, we equate also to the concept of adultery as well. And therefore, we have the din of Yehareg, one should be killed, to Al Yavor by these three cardinal sins. And there is a fascinating approach that Tosfos takes. Tosfos writes, when it comes to idolatry, it's an explicit pasuk in the Chumash. And therefore, I always have to give up my life. That's the notion that Tosfos writes. When it comes to murder, though, Tosfos says, one could postulate the following. Let's say someone would threaten that he will throw me on top of a baby, God forbid. And if I don't let him do that, he will kill me. What's the din in such a case? So Tosfos writes that I am not doing the murder. I'm being thrown on the baby. And Tosfos therefore says that the only time you have to give up your life is when proactively you engage in an act of murder or in an act of adultery. Therefore, in this case, I'm being used as the article, as a bullet in a sense, but I am not actually the murderer, therefore I do not have to give up my life. And Tosfos takes this a step further regarding the realm of adultery. And he writes that if a woman is threatened to commit adultery, Esther, according to Abaye, was karka olam. She took a passive role, and therefore a woman in general, most of the time, says Tosfos, takes a passive role, and therefore since she takes a passive role in such a situation, where she plays a passive role, then Tosfos says a woman would not have to give up her life, because she is playing a passive role. Only where you play an active role do you have to let yourself be killed. Therefore, Tosfos writes, if the woman would be threatened that she should place herself aggressively upon the man, where she, in a sense, is playing an active role, then in that case, Tosfos says, she would have to give up her life. And then Tosfos says, conversely, regarding the man, if the man is threatened to live with the woman, and he only is mistashe when he will live with this particular woman. There's a din of ein kishu yelo ladas. Therefore, he's doing this willingly, and he has to let himself be killed. If, however, you can envision a scenario, Tosos writes all this, where the man was mistashi already for his wife, and he was taken from his wife and forced on another woman. In that case, he's playing a passive role, and he would not have to give up his life. What we're bringing out is Tosos takes it to the extreme that the only time that we will invoke that you have to give up your life for Yehareg Val Yavor is when the man plays or the woman plays an active role. If you can envision a case where they play a passive role, then you don't say Yehareg Val Yavor. If you can envision a case where they play an active role, then a man and woman are equal. That's place of Shita all over Shas. This is what Tosus holds all over Shas. Okay. That's Tosus' approach. Now, the Rambam's approach seems a bit different, and let's analyze the Rambam. There is a famous Reb Chaim on the Rambam, the Rav's grandfather, in Hilchos Yesodi HaTorah, analyzes what the Rambam's opinion is. Because the Rambam is very fascinating. The Rambam never quotes Karka Olam. There is a machlokas Abaye the Rava, how Abaye was able to live without, how Esther was able to live without Achashverosh. Abaye says she was passive, Karka Olam Haisu. Rava says Achashverosh was only interested in his own Hana, his own benefit and pleasure, and therefore there was no concept of Chil Hashem. Now, the Rambam never quotes Abaye Shita of Karka Olam. Seemingly, the Rambam only holds like Rava. Whenever there's a machloikis between Abaye and Rava and Shas, we always follow Rava. So it seems to me that the Rambam understood that Abaye and the Rava were arguing, and therefore the Rambam only quotes Rava that there's an exemption of Hana. If Achashverosh was doing it for his own benefit, then there is no problem. There is no din of Yaro Vayavor in such a case. Hana's Atzmo is going to be a Ptur. But Abaye, that's Rava's opinion. Abaye holds Karka Olam. So the Rambam view that they are arguing, and the Rambam holds like Rava. Rabbi Kivager points out on the bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch that it's very possible to say Abaye and Rava weren't arguing. And each exemption is legitimate on its own. Okay. So, therefore, let's go in the following vein. And therefore, it's possible to say, and this is what Reb Chaim wants to postulate in the Rambam. He claims that the Rambam never mentions Karka Olam. And therefore, one could say that in all cases, the Rambam would say, Halacha L'maisa, Yeharad Ba'al Yavor, when it comes to the Halacha of Gilui Arayis. Meaning, a woman would always have to give up her life. In all cases, except if it's Hanas Atzma. Tosos, we describe, says that only when you play a proactive role must you have to give up your life. If you play a passive role, you are exempted. The Rambam never mentions this. So says Reb Chaim, it seems to be that according to the Rambam, when it comes to Karka Olam, that is not an exemption. And therefore, Gilui Arayis by definition means even if the woman plays a passive role, she would have to give up her life. And therefore, he writes the following. He says, one could say the following issue, and that is, he explains the following. He explains that the Rambam understood fundamentally different than Tosfos. How is that? Because the Rambam understood, when I'm threatened to kill Mr. X, why am I not allowed to kill Mr. X? Because who am I to make the decision that my soul is more precious than his, and therefore I have to let myself be killed? But when it comes to Gilui Arayis, there is no such concept of your soul being one precious, more precious than one, someone else's soul. When it comes to Gilui Arayis, there is no such concept. And therefore, when it comes to what? Ritzicha, murder, you have that notion, I can't make that decision. But by Gilui Arayis, as Reb Chaim writes, we never say, Lo Shayach Zos, Barayis, the name of the Bikuach Nefesh Shoko Karayis. And therefore, one would postulate that according to the Rambam, in all cases of Gilui Arayis, the woman has to give up her life, even if she's playing a passive role. Even if she's playing a passive role. And that's what Reb Chaim wants to suggest, Halacha L'maisa. He wants to suggest in such a case that a woman would have to, in fact, give up her life. And he says that maybe one could, if you could envision in theory, which is very difficult to do. He writes, if you could find a case where someone will be labeled as a murderer, but you do not do a maisa, you don't play an active role, what would be the din in that case? What would be the halacha in that case? What would we say in that halacha? In other words, by Gili Elias, we said a woman has to give up her life even if she doesn't play an active role. And we said we make an equation between murder and adultery. So if you can envision a case of murder where you're labeled as the murderer but you did not do the action, the same halacha would apply that you have to give up your life. How can you envision such a case? This is what was perplexed in yeshiva. I asked my students. What'd you say?
You hire somebody to kill.
Well, that per se, you're not going to be that. There's a din of Shammai Hazakeh that we would say yesh shliach l'dvar aveira that we don't pass the
life. You're not forced to do it, so that wouldn't be.
Right, you're not forced to do it. I thought of a case, but it's crazy. If, let's say a man would sit on someone. I don't know, a 400-pound linebacker would sit on someone, right? And he's sitting and reading the paper for 5 hours. And the guy dies because he suffocates. But the guy says, the linebacker says, wait a minute, I was just reading the Times. What did I do wrong? So on one hand, maybe you can label him as a rotseach, but on the other hand, he's not doing a mitzvah. It's hard to imagine such a case, though. Right, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard to imagine such a case. But that would be Gram Ritzicha. That's not necessarily Ritzicha Mamish. Like if you take away the water. But the truth is,
but the water is very safe cases where you're putting the person on the board, you won't let the person get out or whatever.
Right.
You're
so that seems to be a Meissen. In this case, though, you want to come up with a case where there's no Meissen. Okay, but it's when you sit on him the first second, you're not killing him. So whatever the case might be, what we want to bring out is the following, is that if you could envision such a case, the Chaim says we equate adultery with murder. But he says if you're threatened to be thrown on the baby, you're a bullet. You're not even called a murderer. So Reb Chaim writes, according to the Rambam, he would agree with Tosos, that if I'm threatened to be thrown on a baby, or he'll kill me, I can be thrown on the baby. And I won't die in that case, the baby will, Kaf Shalom. But I am not obligated to give up my life, because in that case, I'm not called a murderer. Why? I'm not called a murderer, I'm a bullet. And therefore, if I'm a bullet, therefore I don't have to give up my life. Whereas according to Tosos, I also don't have to give up my life. But why? Because Tosos said, the reason why I don't have to give up my life is because I'm not playing an active role, I'm playing a passive role. So both Rambam and Tosos will agree to the din for two different reasons. That's according to the first mahalach of the of Reb Chaim. Then, yeah, go ahead. So he says Achashverosh did it for his own hana. Own hana, right. Okay. According to the Baal Amor, Hanoch Atmo takes care of the Maisa Vera of adultery, idolatry, and murder. According to the Baal Amor. Pashup Shad, he'll say Hanoch Atmo. That's the Pashup Shad. Or you could say that he might hold like the Rabbeinu Tam, that the Yisakim is to be a Sevehema. There's different ways to, but for our purposes now, according to Reb Chaim's first Mahalach, the Rambam will agree with Tosfos in the baby case. But for two different reasons. Yeah, go ahead. Yes. Yeah, but you're not even called, you're not called the Rotseh. For sure it's not a Maisa. But according to Reb Chaim, that doesn't make a difference. According to Reb Chaim, if you could envision a case where you're called a Rotseh, even without a Maisa, you would be chayav to give up your life like Gili Elias. The woman is obligated to give up her life even though she's not playing an active role. So what we have to do is downgrade it even further to say you're not even called a Rotseh, you're called a bullet. Okay. Then Reb Chaim lays down a different shot completely. He writes the following. He says that according to the Rambam, what follows is that in the realm of the three cardinal sins, pikuach nefesh goes right out the window. We know the Torah has a din b'chai behem, v'lo sheyamos behem. You live by mitzvahs, peheim and alef from Maseches Yuma, don't die by mitzvahs. If someone takes a gun to my head, eat a ham sandwich, in a private forum, I should eat the ham sandwich. Save my life. To save my life. There's a notion whether I can be machmer on myself or not. Which the Tosfos writes, I can be machmer, let myself be killed. And the Rambam writes, I'm culpable in Shemayim by Hashem. I should have eaten the ham sandwich to keep my life alive. Okay. Whatever the case might be, though, we know there's a din of pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh don't control Shabbos. To save someone's life, of course. When it comes to the realm of these three cardinal sins, pikuach nefesh goes right out that window. And therefore, there's no obligation to try to save oneself in this realm. And it could very well be that this is seen in the machlokas between Rebbe Kiva and Ben Keturah on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph from Bava Metzia. What is the din if there are two men in a desert and one of the two men has a canteen of water? And if he shares it with the other man, they both will not survive. If he keeps the canteen to himself, he will survive, his friend will perish. Rebbe Kiva says, Chayecha Kodim. Drink your water, save yourself. Ben Keturah says, no, you must share it, even though you both will perish. Says Reb Chaim, why does Rebbe Kiva have to dig up a pasuk of Chayecha Kodim? You know why? Because normally, when it comes to life and death situations, right? Life and death situations, we have a din of pikuach nefesh. But if it's within the realm of the three cardinal sins, pikuach nefesh goes right out the window. Your friend's going to die. So even Rebbe Kiva would have agreed to Ben Keturah that you could not save yourself unless there was a pasuk of Chayecha Kodmin, your life comes first because it's your canteen. And the Rav said, B'shem Reb Chaim, that what would be the din in a canteen of Hefker? Let's say no one owns the canteen. What's the din? You don't jump on it like a football. Rebbe Kiva says to Ben Keturah, I agree with you. Let them both perish. Because you can't save yourself through the death of a friend. Pikuach nefesh goes right out the window when it comes to the notion of these three cardinal sins. And therefore, says, this is what comes out according to Reb Chaim. Let's get this. According to the second approach in the Rambam of Reb Chaim, what do you think the Rambam would say in the baby case? Where I'm threatened to be thrown on the baby, and if I don't let myself be thrown on the baby, he'll kill me. What would you say in that case? We said in the first Mahalach of the Rambam would agree to Tosfos, I don't have to let myself be killed, because why, you're not even called the Rotzeach, it's a bullet. In this case, maybe one could postulate, according to this Mahalach, this is the realm of someone's life dying. The baby will die. And if the baby will die, I am saving myself through the death of the baby. You know what emerges? What emerges in that case, I would have to let myself be killed. And the Rambam will argue on Tosfos in the baby case if you take the second Mahalach of Reb Chaim. Amazing Chiddush. Amazing Chiddush.
That's not a bullet situation.
Doesn't make a difference. Because as long as it's in the realm of someone being could be saved or dying, I'm associated in that frame. And therefore, I am saving myself through the death of someone else. And therefore, I must let myself, what, be killed in such a case. And Rav Shechter pointed out, you know, there is a famous machloikis, sure everyone's familiar with it, halachically, what's the definition of death in halacha? Rabbi Tendler is of the opinion that brain death, halachically, is considered someone to be passed away, and therefore one can take one's heart out of such a person because they've already been nifter and save someone else. Rabbi Bloich, on the other extreme, wrote a whole sefer claiming not that way, that brain dead, you're halachically still alive. And the middle sheet of Rav Shechter said that the Rav held was a fake in the dina, where you have to be machmer in both directions. In other words, you have to be machmer to assume the person is alive, could not take one's organ out in such a case. On the other extreme, a Kohen should not visit that person in the hospital because he's goses. A goses means imminently his death could come at any time, and therefore a Kohen is not allowed to visit a goses. He would be machmer in both directions. But Rav Shechter said, Let's say you hold of the shita that someone who's brain dead halakhically is still alive. Because if you define life as being your circulatory system, the blood flowing in your body, if that defines life, that's still taking place. So even though someone might be brain dead, halakhically you're still considered to be alive. What would be if, in fact, a heart would be removed from such a person that is brain dead? If the heart would be removed from someone that is brain dead, what would be the deed? That would be murder, you're right. But let's say it was removed. Would it be permissible for a person to be a recipient of that heart? Now, if you'd have stopped me, I would have said, yeah, why not? You didn't do the murder. Okay? According to this Mahalik of Reb Chaim, which Shechter pointed out, you are saving yourself through the death of someone else. I understand, but maybe you can't be the beneficiary of someone's death. And maybe that's exactly what Rabbi Akiva would agree to Ben Petura.
But if it was taken out no matter what,
I understand.
Then it could be given to you or him, why can't you take it?
I understand, but it comes out that you were the address. You were the address. It wasn't for you.
Somebody.
You want to say if it wasn't for you, someone else would have gotten it, but the fact is you got it.
Not necessarily. What if you're in the situation afterwards? Someone comes and shows in the car accident after this person's heart is already taken out.
Right.
Up.
I mean, it was already taken out.
It was already taken out, and then that person
was used. Look, I'm not saying halakhically, I'm just saying in theory, though, you could argue, though, but once it was put in, you are the beneficiary.
You can't be the beneficiary when you need it.
I understand that, but the truth is, retroactively, we view it as you were saved through the death of someone else. So maybe we find this halakhic psak of the Reb Chaim in the second version. Okay, now I want to just mention that the Chazon Ish has Gilyonos in the back of Reb Chaim, and in the Shita Mekubetzes it's clearly said like this. So Reb Chaim laid down a premise in the first Mahalik we mentioned that there's a notion, I don't have the right to make a decision whose life is more precious than someone else's life. But by giving a rise, you never have that issue. Because it's not in the sense of defaming. So the Chazon Ish says that's true. Since giving a rise is defaming someone's nefesh as well. Both the man if he's forced, or both the woman if she's forced. The Shita Mekubetzes says that explicitly. From the perspective of a man that would forcibly live with a woman, he's being poking her nefesh. So you could argue on that premise that Reb Chaim makes, and it's rooted in Shita Mekubetzes right here, that there could be a pogam in nefashos, not just limited to murder, but also might apply to giving a rise as well. But this is the Chiddush, stunning Chiddush of Reb Chaim that emerges in this particular sugya. Okay. Now, there are some few other details that I meant to mention in Shulchan Aruch before we get to the notion of Abizrayu, and then we have to do the Yisur and the Gabi Kiddush Hashem. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, when you talk about someone, one person living and the other person dying, does it have to be from the same act that would have killed? Because the thing about the heart, it wasn't the same act. I agree.
That wouldn't make a difference. Wouldn't make a difference. That would be from the same.
Like I would, you know, it's different than I'm either throwing the
person on the baby,
or you're shooting the gun. I'll shoot you, or I'll shoot you. It's different.
It's like
the same act that saves the person.
Doesn't have to be. And you're just saying if it's more direct, you could make such a distinction.
The same act.
Well, if you think about the canteen case in the desert, right?
Right. The same act. But every time I take a drink. Every ounce that I take kills that other person. So there's a direct.
Yeah, but that's indirect. That's itself indirect. I'm not directly taking a dagger and putting it in his heart.
Right. I understand they're all indirect. Every one of them is indirect.
Right.
But it's the same action.
Yeah, but I think already it's an excellent point you're saying. Once you make that quantum leap that you're not directly putting a dagger in the guy's heart, then already you make the distinction that it doesn't have to be the same action that does both. Okay? That's what basically would emerge. I hear what you're saying, but once you make that distinction, it would allow you to make that another leap. So that's the din.
They call it the, I guess the issue, it could be direct or indirect, is also your correlation.
Okay.
One of them is 100% correlation. As long as
I hear you, but I'm saying from a halakhic perspective, once you say that even though I'm not I'm drinking my own canteen, but I'm not directly hurting him. But you're still saying that saving yourself at the means of someone else, so you'd say the same thing in the hard case probably as well. Okay? All right. I wanted to mention a few other details that are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch regarding the Shlosha Averus, and this is a Siman Kuf Nun Zayin in your day. Let's say someone threatens a person, a Jewish person, someone threatens me, I'm going to kill you unless you say that you're not Jewish. He doesn't force you to bow down to a tree or an idol. He says you're not to deny that you're Jewish. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's tantamount to idolatry, and you must give up your life. The Ramah writes, if I say a language that can be understood in one of two ways, that's okay. If I dress up in a way that it looks like I'm not Jewish, but I never verbalize and articulated that I'm not Jewish, that's also okay. But to say clearly that you're not Jewish, that's tantamount to avodah zarah. You have to give up your life.
Does it matter if there's a million of people there or not?
We said it's the three cardinal sins, even in a private form.
Okay.
That's denouncing Judaism. That's the chiddush you find in the Shulchan Aruch.
Who says it?
The Shulchan Aruch.
No, the Ramah.
The Ramah about the two Lashonos?
Yeah.
That's the Ramah. The Machaber writes if you denounce the Judaism. Okay. Says the Pesach Shuvit. I'm sorry? Because you're denouncing the fact that you're not Jewish. We consider that to be tantamount to Avodah Zarah. Is it Apikoris, a non-believer, tantamount to Avodah Zarah? That's a good question.
But
the truth of the matter is that one could say that might be, if you are, you're becoming a mumar in that sense by going ahead and saying, I'm not Jewish anymore. So maybe one could say that that's considered to be tantamount to be Avodah. That's at least what the Shulchan Aruch writes. That's what we see from this thing. Right. Right. Well, if you take it from the perspective that it's a Chil Hashem type of oriented halacha, then one could say that what this is a Chil Hashem of the highest degree, and a Chil Hashem that relates to these three sins, you must give up your life. Okay? You have to think about it. There's no Maisa ever. There's no Maisa ever. I never do a Maisa. I'm not going to bow down and I give up my life. The same thing is here. If you look at it from a Chil Hashem orientation, it lends itself to say perhaps this halacha. That's one important. Yeah, go ahead.
In the case of Ram denying the Jews.
Yes. Yeah. That's okay unless you have to articulate it.
But it seems that it says
in Shulchan Aruch to save you in order that you won't be killed. So that's probably a demand.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
There are non-Jews who are considered not to be idolaters.
Yeah.
But you could argue that he's saying I'm not sure that I'm an adult.
It says to say you're an Ovid Kochavim. To say you're Ovid Kochavim. So you want to say that means an idolater? I mean, there is a Meiri in the Sechus of Avodah Zarah. It says in many places that the star worshippers that was in the Sechus of Avodah Zarah, we don't have nowadays. The star worshippers used to actually deify, like in Dor Enosh, the Rambam writes, constellations. But if you're talking about Christians, according to Rabbeinu Tam, say it's only a Shutfis, the Trinity is only a Shutfis, not a Vodazar, or Islam, which certainly is monotheism, not a Vodazar. They just believe in a false prophet, Muhammad, the Rambam writes. So that it doesn't say. It seems to be, if you would engage, that you would be an idol worshiper, or pagan, or someone that's pagan. That's what it seems to be.
It's not saying you're not Jewish.
Prohibited for a person to say that he is a Ovid Kochavim.
Oh.
Okay? Which is, I think that's, you know, it's the same thing. I think it's semantics to say whether you're not, you know, to say you're not Jewish is saying you're all the Kochavim. But maybe it means, it's an excellent point we were saying, that maybe you have to say actual engage in Avodah Zarah. Maybe. I'm not so sure. I kind of find that difficult, because we say, I think we mentioned last week that Christianity is a dispute between the Ram and the Rabbeinu Tam for non-Jews. But for Jews, the Minchasina points out, it's certainly Avodah Zarah. So I would think that it's certainly going to, would be a problem, halakha l'maaseh. That's what it seems from the Makabre.
It's all the atheist problem.
Right? Correct. Absolutely.
Muslim,
that Islam would not be. The question is, you're renouncing it, though. So, Islam's not Avodah Zarah, though. That's an interesting question. But l'maaseh, that's an interesting question. Probably not. You probably would have to say something to Avodah Zarah. Yeah, go ahead. Well, but you're saving your life with it, so there's no greater seriousness than that, right?
Even if you don't.
Yeah, but if you're measuring seriousness by your life, obviously, you know, that's very important. Okay, that's number one detail. Second detail, there is a bracha, actually, that was recited when someone would give up their life in front of 10 Jews. Baruch Ata Hashem, Nekadosh Yishimcha, Shmo Barabin. Baruch Ata Hashem, Okinimach Hashem, Shem Dazor, Lekadei Shmo Barabin. There actually was a bracha that was recited before someone would give up one's life in front of 10 Jews. Now, what's the definition of 10 Jews? Would you count, for example, it says, V'nitashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael. So the question is, does it have to be people that make up a Davrshib Kedusha? That's the Pisrei Tshuva Suffolk. Pisrei Tshuva Suffolk is when we include, let's say, for example, Geirim. Because we find drushes where it says sometimes B'nai Yisrael to exclude Geirim. And then he says, Halacha L'maisa, he's mistopic about that. Halacha L'maisa. He's mistopic about that. What about, he says, women? Women don't make up a minion. So would women make up the 10 Jews? That would be mandate someone that you'd have to give up your life. So that's the second detail that I wanted to mention regarding this din. Okay. Yes, Asher Kiddushanu V'Sanatar L'Kadesh Shmo B'Rabin. Yes, yes, absolutely. The third point that I wanted to mention, and that is that we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, as we mentioned the topic last week, that only in one direction do we assume that it's obligatory upon a person to give up one's life. What do I mean in one direction? A Jewish man with a non-Jewish woman. However, the situation, which would be, let's say, for example, a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman, a Jewish woman would be threatened that you must live with this non-Jewish man or you will be killed, she does not have to give up her life. If a Jewish man is threatened to live with a non-Jewish woman in front of 10 Jews, then you would have to give up your life, because that's Tanayim Pogimbo, Halakha L'maisa. And then the question would be, I thought Avi was going to ask me on this, because the Halakha of Tanayim Pogimbo is always, because Avi's always on the ball, and I thought you were going to catch me with this. Because the halakha of Tanayim Pogimbo, we learned is only in front of 10 what? It's always in front of 10 Jews. But we said, any aveira you do in front of 10 Jews, you have to give up your life. So what are you saying so special here? So the Shach says like this. The Shach says, a beautiful Kiddush. The Shach says, even if, in such a situation, that it's being done, l'hanas atzmo, the Jewish man is going to live with the non-Jewish woman, and the man who's threatening my wife is going to get some benefit out of it. I don't know, let's say the kids are going to be his. Or the man is threatening me to live with this non-Jewish woman because he's going to get some benefit out of it. So normally we said, Hanas Atzmo, what do we say? There's no chiyuv. Hanas Atzmo is not considered to be a din. A situation of that shouldn't be a problem. But when it comes to Tanayim Pogimbo, the halacha is that you have to give up your life if it's called Gili Arayis. Even if it's Hanas Atzmo, it's Yarovo Yavor. Because the halakha is these three cardinal sins, even if it's for hanas atzmo, that the non-Jew is threatening me, I must give up my life. I must give up my life against the Baal Mor. We hold like the Ramban. By the other Averis in the Torah, the ham sandwich case, let's say the man is threatening my life to eat the ham sandwich, and he knows that if I eat ham sandwiches, he'll make millions of dollars on his ham sandwiches, his business. He's not doing it because he wants to break Yadus. He's doing it because he wants to make money. He wants to make money. So therefore, he wants me to eat the ham sandwich. I don't have to give up my life. The only time I have to give up my life in front of 10 Jews, says the Shulchan Aruch, is when he's doing it to break Yadus. He's doing it for his own personal benefit, for an Atzma. I don't have to give up my life. But when it comes to what? Yili Arayis? Or adultery, or adultery, or idolatry, even if it's for the non-Jew's own personal benefit, I must give up my life. Hanas Atzmo gets rid of the problem of Chil Hashem. It doesn't get rid of the problem of the three cardinal sins themselves, the actual Maisa Aveira. And therefore, that's the Kiddush, that a Jewish man that threatened to live with a non-Jewish woman is in front of 10 Jews. That's called Gil Arayis. But anything in front of 10 Jews is called a din of Yara Vayara because of Chil Hashem. No! If the man is forced to eat the ham sandwich for his own personal benefit, I don't have to give up my life. I can eat the ham sandwich. But when it comes to Gili Arayis, even if it's for a Nos Atzmo, I must give up my life. No, so you answer that for me also. There are always two problems, either Chil Hashem or the actual Aveira. So the Baal Amor learns how Nos Atzmo takes care of both. It's not called adultery, there's no Chil Hashem. The Ramban says no. The Ramban says it takes care of the Chil Hashem because he did it for his own benefit, but it doesn't take care of the Aveira. The Ramban will hold like Rabbeinu Tam, that Bias Akim is Bias Abahema. The Ramban might hold they weren't married, Esther and Mordechai. It wasn't Gili Arayis. Absolutely. So that's the thing you always got to keep in mind, the Machlokes in the Baal Amor and the Ramban. What did Hanas Atzmo take care of? The Baal Amor says it takes care of the actual Aveira. It also takes care of the Chil Hashem. The Rabbi says it only takes care of the Chil Hashem. Oh, what about the action that there wasn't an Aveira? Either they weren't married or the Rabbi holds like a bit of time. Be a sacrament, give me a name, wasn't give me a rice.
The
Rabbi
holds that not
give me
a
rice,
of course, of a Jewish woman is supposed to be named after a different type of a rice, as opposed to the other way around. Is that what the Rabbi holds?
We said, according to the Rabbi, that's Kenoi and Pogimbo, though. That's Kenoi and Pogimbo, because it's in public, because that's considered to be a Maisa Aveira.
Right, but it's a Jewish woman.
Right, so the Esther is not a problem. It only works in one direction. Because we said the Maisa Aveira, according to the Ramban, is only when you're going to produce children that aren't going to be Jewish. Exactly. So that's what it comes out to be. Very important. And we passed like the Ramban. Very important. The three cardinal sins, you must give up your life, even if the guy's doing it for his own benefit. But if it's in a realm of in front of 10 Jews, other Aveiras, the only time I have to give up my life is if he's trying to break Yadus. If he's doing it for his own Hana, I don't have to give up my life. Do not. Same halacha. You have to give up your life. Same halacha. The Maisa Aveira is there. Maisa Aveira is still there. Even if he's doing it for his own benefit, he still must give up his life.
How about
That's exactly the next point I was going to get to. Excellent. Fifth point. Fifth detail in Shulchan Aruch. There's an amazing din in the Gemara that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Let's say the Jews are threatened to wear red shoelaces. Arkana de Masana. It's a Shachar Shema. They want to break down Yahadus. Non-Jews want to destroy Yahadus. They wanted to break down Yahadus. What's the din in such a case? That's a minig. That's not halacha. You still have to give up your life. Yeah, the Gemara says that. But the reason what I'm bringing out in Shulchan Aruch, why is this a fifth detail? It's not an Aveira what you're doing to wear red shoelaces. But if they're doing, if they're mandating an act to break down Yadus, that also falls under the halacha. You must let yourself be killed. Now there's a caveat to this. There's a caveat to this that the Ramah quotes from the Ran. The Ramah quotes from the Ran in Shabbos. What's that? Let's say, very important din. Let's say that the decree was made that they don't want the Jews to fulfill a mitzvah's essay. They don't want the Jews to put on tefillin, like the story of Elisha Baal Kanafayim in Shabbos Taf Kuf Lamed Amud Aleph. They don't. They want to stop you from doing an essay. Not that they're forcing you to transgress a law. If they're forcing you to eat ham, that and they're breaking down Yahadus, that was their mandate, then you must give up your life. But they can decree not to put on tefillin. What's the din in that case? The Ran writes, and the Ramah quotes this Levina, you do not have to give up your life, but if you want, you have the option to be stringent and risk being killed. Therefore, you could risk putting on the tefillin, but you're not obligated to. So here there's a distinction made between an essay, abstaining from doing a mitzvah, and number two, proactively transgressing a law. That's the Ramah's chiluk that he makes. B'shem the Ran. Fascinating chiluk. Okay? Yeah, go ahead. No, you yourself are. Can you yourself put on film and risk your life and be caught? So Mikra Adin, you're not obligated to, but you can if you want. Whereas if you are forced to eat ham, you have to let yourself be killed. Right. That din of Pikuach Nefesh in this halacha, anything regarding Chil Hashem for the 10 Jews would fall out. But here he makes the skiluk that somehow abstaining from doing anything is not a proactive maisa, and therefore you would not have to let yourself be killed. Would not have to leave something. Fascinating Kiddush. Fascinating Kiddush.
What about the Nazi accident where they made everybody put on those stars?
Yeah.
So why didn't they have to give up their lives for that?
That's affirming God.
Yeah.
But putting on red shoelaces doesn't affirm or
Right. So that you have to say, and you know, there's a very great goer of Ushri that has Sfarim and Tshuvas in the Holocaust. So that is exactly, it was affirming that they were Jewish. Wasn't giving in to a decree to break down Yahadus. What that was doing is to say that they are making the Jews like the non-Jews. In other words, that they are going to blend in society, will not be recognizable that someone is Jewish. So by doing that, you're basically giving in to them breaking down Yahadus, and that's a grave concern.
So when you said, in order to break down Yahadus, you need to make the call that there was enough. If he's doing it, just to give me a patch, you know.
Right.
I'm going to make you walk around with a multicolored wig or something like that. You know, crazy, you know.
Right.
You're doing it to break down Yahadus.
Right. You have to measure that.
You look stupid.
You have to gauge that. You're talking about the stakes are high, giving up your life, right?
Exactly.
Let's do that. So you have to. Right.
Actually break down Yahadus. So you're doing it because we all do it, and you're going to look just like us.
Right, it has to be clear that was the notion.
As opposed to doing it,
yeah, just stop to be Meshuggah, right. But you're
not even Meshuggah and say, I'm going to take your life if you don't do this thing. But he's doing it not instead of break down Yahadus. And he gains no benefit from it. So he just wants to make it.
Okay, well, let's say it's a decree on every people of the land. So then, that's not being done to break down Yahadus. The guy's a Meshuggah, he's a dictator. But if it's to break down Yahadus, then that would be this particular thing.
For the benefit of.
To destroy Judaism. To destroy Judaism, that itself. To destroy Judaism, that would be enough.
You don't have to go all the way to
Zohar. We're basically equating the two. Breaking down Yahadus on a public realm is almost tantamount to Avodah Zarah. That's what we're assuming in the dinner.
So if you have a crazy dictator who wants to say, you know what? I want everyone to be atheist.
I believe so. I believe that we would say that, yes. But if it's a guy says, I want everyone to get rid of their cars, right? Whether they're Jews or non-Jews, that would not be something that you have to give up your life about.
I'm dealing with your religious thing.
Right, absolutely. So
you don't have to go to the positive of...
No, I think that would be assuming... I think we would label that. Right, I think we would label that as... Right, I think we would label that as a Vodazara. I believe so. Okay. Now let's move to the following, and that is, according to the Baal HaMor, there is a very important halacha that emerges, and that is the din of Ein Nisrapin Ba'at HaSherut. And there's a Mishnah in Trumas about this din. What does Ein Nisrapin Ba'at HaSherut mean? If you have a tree, an HaSherut tree that has been deified, And there are some chemists that develop a pill that will save someone's life. Let's say, God forbid, Rahman al-Islam, someone has cancer, and this will save someone's life with this pill. But this tree has been deified. is one allowed to take this pill to save someone's life in such a case? The Gemara writes in Sochem, Ein Misrapin Batei Asher Chafei Amar Aleph. And according to the Baal HaMor, the question is why? The Baal HaMor says that we assume, according to the Baal HaMor, Hanos Atzmo is considered to be the notion when the non-Jew is getting benefit, we assume Ein Misrapin Batei Asher is prohibited. If the non-Jew is getting benefit, then we said you could engage in one of the three cardinal sins. Tosfos writes, Ein Misrapin Batei Asher, because we're afraid you might come to deify the tree. You've taken a pill that might save your life, you'll come to deify the tree. It's like a Xeru. The Ram writes, it's an Abizrayu. What does an Abizrayu mean? A subcategory. A subcategory of the Gimel of Eretz. The subcategory of Avodah Zarah. Even though you're not serving this idol, but you're deriving benefit from it. So the Rav explained that the Baal HaMor would hold the following, that you're never allowed to derive any benefit from these three cardinal sins, even though you're not directly deifying and serving it as an idol. The Chiddush of the Halacha is you're never allowed to derive benefit from the issue of murder, from the issue of adultery, like the case in the Gemara where the man had an emotional disease and he had to speak to a woman who was not wearing any clothes behind a fence, and he has to give up his life. The doctors say this is the only thing that will cure him if he speaks to the woman. He has to give up his life. According to one opinion, she's a married woman. But what's the halacha? They're not living together, but you're deriving benefit from a realm of Gilui Arayis. And if you derive benefit from any of these three categories, you must give up your life. And this din is found in the Mishnah in Trumas. The Mishnah writes, if I'm carrying loaves of bread of Truma, and a non-Jew comes over to me and says, if you don't give me one of those loaves, I'm going to be metame, I'm going to make ritually impure all the loaves. Am I allowed to give him one loaf? No. I'm not allowed to give him one, and therefore he's going to be metame all of them. That's the din. Then the Mishnah writes, what happens if you have a group of women, Jewish women, are hiding out in a cave, and the non-Jews say that they want to live with one of the women? Are you allowed to give over one of the women? And if they don't give over one of the women, the non-Jews will live with all the women. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to give over one of them. The Rav said, what's the comparison between the loaves of bread and the women? Why does the Mishnah compare the two? Obviously, the stakes are much higher, obviously. There's no doubt about it with the case of the women. So the Rav said, Ella, it must be that the Gemara Mishnah is trying to relate to us a new halacha. What is that halacha? The halacha is you're not allowed to save yourself through the expense of these three sins. You're not allowed to what? Save these loaves of bread through the expense of being one loaf becoming tummy. And therefore, that's what the Ritva Paskins of Sochin. If someone says that, sees that I have a gun, and someone comes over to me and says, if you better give me your gun so I can kill Mr. X, and if you don't give me your gun, I'm going to kill you. Can I give over my gun to Mr. X? The Ritva says no. Why not? I'm not doing the killing. It's not like the classic case that we gave from the outset of this year, that I'm threatening to kill him with my pistol. He's threatening to what? To kill me if I don't give him the pistol. Then he's going to do the shooting. I'm not doing the shooting. Still, says the Ritva, you have to let yourself be killed. Because that's deriving benefit in the realm of murder. And you're not allowed to derive benefit from these three cardinal sins.
You're allowing yourself to be thrown on the baby?
That's a little bit different because you're a bullet in that case. According to Tosfos, you're a bullet.
But you're not even a bullet by giving him the gun.
I understand, but you want to say that according to... No, you're saying that according to the Rav's shot here, with the Ritva and the Baal HaMor, you're not allowed to derive benefit. Maybe. You know, maybe that would be similar to what we said according to Reb Chaim in the second Mahalach in the Rambam. According to Tosfos, you'd be putter because you're in Tosfos, in this case, you're playing a passive role. So you'll be exempt. According to the Rambam, you're right. Maybe according to the Rambam, Reb Chaim, this should be cast out of that case.
So why not just say, take the gun and not give it to him? If you say, here, take the gun. And
so that's
it,
so you have,
taking
but,
it out. He's taking it from
no, but it's like you're letting him do that. It's like you have to let yourself be killed because you're deriving benefit from these three cardinal sins. That's the chiddush that the Rav brought out in the Mishnah Truvas. Now, we have to add on the following. What happens if they specify a name? Let's say they specify, let's say this group of men, they're going to kill all the men or give us Mr. X. If they specify the name, can you give over the man? So it's a machlokish, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish in the Yushalmi and Trumas. And the machlokish goes like this. One day it says yes, as long as the name was specified. The other day it says only if the man that was specified was Chayiv Misa himself, like Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri was Chayiv Misa himself because he was more of a machlokish against David HaMelech. He rebelled against David HaMelech. And therefore, you know how the Rambam passes? Normally, when you have a machlokish of Yochanan Reish Lakish, he holds a Rabbi Yochanan. Here, he holds a Reish Lakish. That the Rambam was, you never pass like this, lechatchila. But if they ask for a certain man, you can only give over the man if that man was Chayiv Misa. If he wasn't Chayiv Misa, even though they specified a name, you cannot give him over. Because here it's Suffolk Nefashos Lahakil, says the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah says that the Rambam will go against the general rule of Rabbi Yochanan against Reish Lakish, which he holds usually. Here he'll hold like Reish Lakish, said Suffolk Nefashos Lahakil. Fascinating did. The halakha of Sheven Ben Bichri. This halakha of Sheva Mikhli specifying it. You never want to get in that scenario, Chas V'Shalom. But that's the mission that emerges in the Trumas. And the truth is, Ledinin, the Ramah says, he quotes both these opinions, that if they specify someone, you can give him over. Then he says, V'yesh Omrin, only let that person himself as Chayiv Misa. Fascinating thing. Okay. And the last detail I want to give from Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll go to the other topic, the other subtopic of Yisurin is this. Let's say, in all these scenarios we gave, if you can't escape, and you don't escape, and you transgress one of the three, the Ramah says you're like a dog that has swallowed one's own vomit. The Ramah writes, if you could have escaped and avoided the whole issue, and you don't, because you're lazy, and you end up doing one of the three sins, even though it's an onus, you did it under duress, you're called amazing because you could have avoided the whole thing. Okay? So that's what the Ramah writes. So if we can avoid it, that's the Ramah postulates, the best of our ability, we should try to avoid it. Lamaisa. If you see, it's going to happen. You got to get out of there.
Once the threat is made,
then we said you're an onus, right? But if you can get away, the Rambam writes this also. Rambam says this also. Okay, now we got to go to. Go ahead. We got to go. Then we got to go to the Yisurin. Yes.
With the English Rambam,
yes.
Isn't that the situation?
It's not a vote of Zara.
No.
Why?
You said that of all the three.
Right. You can't derive benefit. Okay. So that would be the same thing. You're deriving benefit from murder, right? Even if you assume brain dead and someone is alive and you didn't remove the heart, but you're the recipient, you are deriving benefit from someone's death. Yes.
You can never be an recipient.
Based on this, in theory, that would be correct, yes. Now, I don't know Ladina.
Well, a separate situation where the organ could be harvested after a person is absolutely dead.
Right.
On a live organ situation, you can.
Correct. If that enabled the person's death or actually killed him, you're absolutely right. Theoretically, you're right. Well, that's a different shaila about Mises Akka. Certainly prohibited, obviously. That's certainly prohibited. You cannot, the murder is prohibited whether it's a Jew or non-Jew. There's a prohibition, obviously, the Rambam says. So the Rambam says it's prohibited. You obviously cannot kill a Jew. You can't kill a non-Jew. But if it happens, are you punishable by death? So Rambam says the Jew is exempt. Right? That was the Rambam that was censored in the Middle Ages because of during times of anti-Semitism. Prohibited, obviously, to kill any human being.
Yeah, but
would it be punishable by death? That's Rambam's distinction.
Well,
So a push up shot based on this Rambam? No. You mean if it emerging from a not a Jew? You mean from a non-Jew? Then that would make it. Maybe that one would make a could make a distinction, unless you say that the iser of Ritzicha, which applies to a non-Jew as well, killing a non-Jew, maybe you would treat it in the same din. Pashtus not, but that's something to theoretically engage.
I think that was Rabbi Kemmer's argument against the other side, even if he held.
Right. Uh-huh. Could be because your brain dead itself is dead.
So he said from the other side,
right,
they would have to admit they were trying to make a distinction between Texas and Missouri and the Jews. Because you still have that problem.
Because it's still an issue.
Right.
Because it's still Oster. So you don't got punishable by death, but it's still Oster. It's still prohibited. Yeah, go ahead. Then we got to go. Then we got, because I want to get to this. Yeah, go ahead.
I just story of a man in Rottenberg.
Yeah. Right, the Rosh. The Rosh wanted to redeem him, and he refused to be redeemed. He died in prison. Well, that wasn't an issue. In other words, why did he do that? I guess that's the issue of he wanted to be machmer on himself. He wanted to be machmer. That wasn't an issue necessarily of being over in the Averis. He just thought that it was going to get out of hand. And for Kiddush L'Shem Shemaim, there's a special din l'gavi pidyon shvuyim that you cannot redeem someone for an exorbitant amount. No matter, even though Tosus writes in Gittin one day, if he's the Gadol Hador, you're allowed to. Tosus says in Gittin on Daphne Tessam and Aleph, but he was the Gadol Hador at that time. He said he didn't want to rely on that Tosus. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
With the, if you want to, for a transplant from Ovid to Avodah Zarah, why do you go as far as the Tikkah? Why do you just say he's the ultimate Atei Asherah?
That's not Avodah Zarah.
Someone who is the Ovid Avodah Zarah.
Right.
If you use his, why, if using the
yeah, but the person himself is not an idol. They don't worship him.
But he's the one who's doing this.
Yeah, but he's not an idol.
You're taking benefit from someone who's
he's not an idol. And first, most we said non-Jews, most of the Christianity per se is not, for us it might be, but he himself is not a deity. Non-Jews that are they're not deities. Okay, but push-up shot not that way. Okay. All right, let's move to the following. The Gemara writes in Ksubis on Lamed Gimel on the base, on the top of the Yomid. Gemara comments regarding Hananya, Mishael, Va'azaria. Okay? Who was Hananya, Mishael, Va'azaria? They were in the court of Nebuchadnezzar. And the Gemara writes the following. Il Mali with the Yud at the end. If it had been, Tosus writes in the Gilam, in the beginning of third paragraph, with an aleph of the enemy that had not been. If Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah would have been threatened that they would have been tortured daily but kept alive, they would have bowed down to the Tselem, the statue or idol in Nebuchadnezzar's court. Again, the Gemara says, if they would have, what they do, they ended up going in the furnace of flames, Shem performed the nace, and they weren't hurt. But the Gemara says, in theory, if they would have been pushed into a corner and said, we're going to torture you for over a year. We're going to torture you for a year, but be kept alive, the Gemara says they would have bowed down to the idol. Amazing Gemara. Tosus asks, Rebbe Kiva, they were combing his flesh. He was enduring terrible tsar, but he refused to be engaged in Avodah Zarah. Okay. That's Tosus' question. He refused to engage in Avodah Zarah, even though he's going to be tortured. So, there is an amazing answer to that kasha of Tosus before we do Tosus' answer. That is quoted in the Shita Mekubetzis, right here, Adaf Lamed Gimel Beis, B'Shem Dekun Trisim. Says remarkably, this is a remarkable answer. He says, Hashem only mandates us when it comes to three cardinal sins to give up one's life instead of doing the three cardinal sins. But to endure unlimited torture, even for the three cardinal sins, you are not obligated to do. Therefore, Rabbi Kiva's pain and torture was limited, was for 5-10 minutes. He knew he was going to perish. But if it's for a year or two, which is an unlimited amount of time, you are not obligated to go ahead through that torture, but rather you can engage in the three cardinal sins. Amazing.
What's considered torture?
Well, that we have to measure. But let
put in prison for the rest of their lives.
It means physical. It means physical torture. Let's explore that. Let's explore this answer. Let's explore this answer. Okay? Because when you visit Masada, and I remember that when we visited Masada, one of our rebbeim mentioned the sheet of the Shittim Kupetzis in Shalbim. And that is that Masada, we know they killed themselves. And the truth of the matter is a big discussion. Were they halakhically correct or not? It's hard for us to even discuss the issue. But from a purely theoretical level, if you discover the Shita, then maybe they were concerned they were going to be tortured. And maybe by them killing themselves, we know the Mikoshino says that killing oneself is tantamount to murder. Someone takes a gun to my head and says, kill yourself or I'll kill you. You have to let him kill you. You can't kill yourself. Killing oneself is tantamount to murder. But if you are going to engage in a limited, being involved in a limited torture, then maybe what they did, there's a limitless. And I can bring a riot to this, maybe. Tosfos says in Gittin, on the Zion of the Beis, I gave him the Mar Makomos. What does Tosfos say in Gittin on the Zion of the Beis? Unbelievable Kiddush. Diva Masko Kofsu. In the Tisha B'Av Gemaras, there was a boat with a group of young boys and young girls. And the girls saw that they were going to be raped. They jumped off the boat and killed themselves. Then the boys took a Kal V'Chomer if they were going to be raped, but at least that is what that is that at least that is what Derech. What do you mean Derech? That's a man and woman living together. But they saw that the boys themselves, they saw they were going to be sodomized by men, which is not natural. So they said, how much more so do we have to give up our lives? And they jumped in the ocean. Tosfos asked, isn't that suicide? Tosfos says no. They thought they were going to endure unlimited tsar, unlimited torture. Somehow for that, you're able to give up your life. That is consistent with the Shita of the Shita Mikubetis. That is consistent with the Shita of the Shita Mikubetis. That's an amazing Kiddush that we're bringing out. Now, Tosfos himself, on Lama Gimel Obeis Dir Maskeh or Malay, does not hold of it. Now, we theoretically hold, and let's get this straight, we know, like we said, that suicide is considered to be like murder. Now, Bizman Hazeh, we assume anyone that, God forbid, has committed suicide, we said Shiva because we assume the person was mentally not stable. Okay? But the Shulchan Aruch talks about a case, it's hard to even theoretically envision it, but the Shulchan Aruch says a man goes up to the roof and says he's completely okay, and he jumps off. So you might say, by definition, doesn't that make him not sane? But let's see, theoretically, I don't know, for some reason, he was totally sane. In such a case, that person, you would not sit Shiva for. Okay? Such a person. But here we're saying that maybe they did this because they thought they were going to draw a limited tsar. Now, Tosfos does not buy this theory. Tosfos holds it dead wrong. The three cardinal sins, you have to give up your life. You have to give up your life, and you have to even endure terrible tsar, terrible torture, but you never can be engaged in the three cardinal sins. So what does Tosfos do with Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah? How does the Gemara say that if they would have been tortured, they would have bowed down to the idol? So Tosfos writes the following. Tosfos says that the statue in Nebuchadnezzar's court was not an Avodah Zarah. It was not an idol. It was like just a statue. It was a statue. And therefore, since it was a statue, it was only an issue of Kiddush Hashem. Should they go one step over and they should they be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim and not what engage in what might, let's say, look not good, but it wasn't real bona fide Avodah Zarah. And therefore, to endure terrible tsar for that, to endure terrible torture for that, that you do not have to be involved in. But if it would have been real Avodah Zarah, they would have had to. Oh. Now the Ramban, brings a proof to Rabbeinu Tam from a Gemara in Sochaman and Gimel and Meis from the frogs. What does the Gemara say? The frogs went into Kivshan Eish during Mitzrayim, during the plagues, they perished to Mekadoshim Shamayim. So Hanani, Meshav, and Azariah say, look at the frogs. If the frogs can do it, we should do it. And that's the exact proof, because we know that the frogs gave of themselves and they were Mekadoshim Shamayim. They learned a lesson from the frogs. But if it was real Avodah Zarah, you don't have to learn any lessons from the frogs. If it's real Avodah Zarah, you have to give your life based on Yarav Yavor. So it must be that it wasn't real Avodah Zarah. And therefore, that's the proof. That's the stunning proof. However, the Rabban continues and quotes B'Shem the Medrash Chazus. He writes, Hananu Meshar Ve'Azari asked Yechezkel what they should do. Yechezkel said, I received the Mesorah from Yeshaya Anavi. You should escape. You should escape. Run away. They said, how can we run away? If we run away, you know what people will say? If we run away, people will say that all the Jews, all the nations of the world, including the Jews, there's no problem to bow down to Itzelem. And we want people to say all the nations of the world will bow down to Itzelem but the Jews. So we're not going to escape. That's what they saw from what the frogs. The frogs could have went to China, to Australia, to New Zealand, but they went to the Kivshan Eish. So if the frogs went to the Kivshan Eish, we have to also. We have to also. And the truth of the matter is that that's the beer according to the Rabban. That they could have escaped, and they didn't. They wanted to be Kivshan Eish. Okay. Now, what I believe emerges from here is the following. If you remember correctly, we said the ham sandwich case, we always give that case, is the example of sins outside of the Shlosha Averis. Okay. Private form, can I be stringent on myself and give up my life? So we said, Tosfos says you can be, and the Rambam says you cannot, you're culpable in Shamayim. You're culpable in Shamayim. However, we should note, the Rabbeinu Yerucham writes, when can you be machmir? When can you be machmir in a private form? This is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Ladina. We didn't mention this detail. The only time I can be machmir is if the non-Jew wants to destroy Yahadus, my Yahadus, by making me eat the ham sandwich. Then I can be machmir. If the non-Jew in the private form is going to make millions of dollars by me eating the ham sandwich, it's just for Hanas Atmo, then I cannot be machmir. I cannot be machmir. That's an important point that sometimes many people forget. The Machaber. Machaber says like this in Shulchan Aruch, that when can you be machmir? Only when he's trying to break down Yadus. But when he's trying to do it for his own personal honor, it's permissible. It's permissible. Now, privately, right. No, privately you can be machmir, but only if he's trying to do it to break down Yadus. He's doing it for no personal benefit. You cannot be machmir. Now, what emerges according to Rabbeinu Tam? This is a chiddush. According to Rabbeinu Tam, in this story, Hananya, Mishael, Azariah. What was this? This is a chiddush. Even if he was trying to do it for himself, hanas atzmo, it's mutter lihachmir al atzmo. That's what emerges from this Rabbeinu Tam. That's what emerged in this Rabbeinu Tam. This is what the Vilna Gaon points out. We got this? That according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's against Rabbeinu Rucham. That you can be machmir in the ham sandwich case, even if he's doing it for his own personal benefit. You can be. Because this was not about Azariah. Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were going to give up their lives. That's what the Vilna Gaon says. What's remarkable about that Vilna Gaon? Number one, the Vilna Gaon's assuming it was a private forum. I thought it was in a public court. Number one. And number two, who says it was being done for his own personal benefit? Nebuchadnezzar wanted to destroy Yadus. The Rambam quotes Nebuchadnezzar as an example of a guy who was a Meshuggah who wanted to destroy Yadus. Nebuchadnezzar was a Meshuggah. The Medrash says in the Pesukim Daniel, he used to eat live rabbits. He's not much a Meshuggah. Pesukim Daniel delineate how he was a crazy man. He was insane. So I'm saying the Vilna Gaon is a chiddush on two fronts. Number one, he says, he was machmir, he was only doing it for his own personal benefit. Maybe Lagavi, Hanan, Meshar, Azariah, they were chamberlains. So he wanted his chamberlains to be subservient to him. them per se. It wasn't to break down the obvious, but it was he wanted all his chamberlains to be subservient to him. So maybe that's what the goat assumed. And number two, the goat assumed he was in a private forum. But that's what the goat says emerges from a Beit Tam, that he would be cholik on the Rabbi Yerucham. Rabbi Yerucham is quoted in Shulchan Aruch that you can only be machmer by the Shar Averis when the person is doing it to break down the obvious. Okay. Now the last din, let's just mention, last two dinim, then we have to close with Chumash. Last two dinim is that according to the Rambam, how does the Rambam understand this whole story of Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah? What do we say the Rambam holds? Are you able to be machmer by Shar Averis? No. According to the Rambam, you cannot give up your life by the ham sandwich case. In this case, what was the story? According to the Rambam, he understood that this is real Avodah Zarah. This is real Avodah Zarah, and therefore it was real Avodah Zarah. That's why Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah refused to what? Refused to give up their life. So then the question is, what did they learn from the frogs? They learned from the frogs that they could have escaped, like the Rambam says in the Medrash Chazus. And they didn't escape, and they engaged in this what? In this possibility that they were going to give up their lives, even though they could have escaped. Halakha L'maisa. Okay. Now, there is a Da'at Kenyan Balei HaTesis, which is in Parshas Noach, Pirkei Tes, Pasukei. Amazing. Amazing Da'at Kenyan on the Pasuk of Achas Dimchem. Achas Dimchem means that there's a prohibition of suicide, and it's tantamount to murder. So the Da'at Kenyan tells a story that during the times of the Crusades, there was a Jewish city where the Nazis were taking the little children and converting them to non-Jewish religions. So there was a rav that paskin that the Jews themselves should destroy, should kill their own children to prevent the Jewish children from being taken. And the other rabbanim got up and said, Chas v'shalom, you can't make such a psak to kill our own children. And they said, if you continue with this psak, that that rav would die of misa mishuna, a strange death. And that's what took place. That rav died a strange death, and it was a mistaken psak. Now, if you assume, per se, that torture could be a physical realm and a spiritual realm, we've mentioned shitas that it's permissible to do what? To maybe kill yourselves, but to kill other people, that we would distinguish that you can never, never do. Never, never do. And therefore, that seems to be the psak that is emerging from the Da'at Kenyan Balei HaTosos. What happened to Masada, what happened with that Tosin Gittin, what happened with the Shita Mekubetz that's saying, to endure unlimited service on yourself, you could engage in the three cardinal sins. You could engage in what? In bowing down to the idol. You could engage in Ma'abed Atzmo L'das. But to kill other people, that we would never allow. That's what emerged from that Da'at Kenyan Balei HaTosos. Okay. Let's close now with a word from the Chumash, and that is that maybe we could suggest in Parshas Vayechi something very special about Menashe. What is that? We know that Menashe was given the bracha second. First Ephraim, then Menashe. Now the Sam Sofer writes, Ephraim is symbolic of Torah, of Godless and Torah. Menashe is symbolic of Hatzlach in the business world. And Torah v'gedula v'makom echad, because in the future Tosfos writes in Bava Basra that there will be no special chelik for Menashe and Ephraim in the land of Eretz Yisrael. They'll have one together. So you see, Menashe is symbolic of the notion of Hatzlach in business, of being a gvir that supports Torah institutions and supports tzedakah and gives money to anim. But you'll find later on in Chumash that Menashe, according to Netziv, is found as being the Torah leaders. Because you know that B'nai Gad B'nai Ruvein settled Evra Yarden, and Chetzi Shevet Menashe also went there. Why Chetzi Shevet Menashe? Because one of the reasons Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to have a land void of Torah, and therefore he chose Menashe, which were great teachers in Torah, to live in the land of B'nai Gad B'nai Ruvein and Evra Yarden. So what happened? In Parshas Vayechi, Menashe is the symbolic of what? The banner of Gashmius, of prosperity. And we find later in Sefer Dvarim, in Parshas Matos, that he somehow, this transformation, where there happens to be a person that has become a Torah leader. So maybe we could suggest that Menashe, through the notion of osmosis, Menashe was the bodyguard was Meshamish served Yosef. He was, in a sense, according to Rabbeinu Bachaye, the older brother of Ephraim. We never find once he complains that he didn't get the brachas. Number two, Rabbeinu Bachaye writes that Ephraim was told, serve your older brother. You know, there's a mitzvah to respect your, not just your parents, but your older brother. I have one brother, he's older than me, and he always reminds me of this halacha, that you have to respect your older brother. And Ephraim was told, you better serve and honor your older brother, because we know you're going to be greater. Everyone knows you're going to be greater. Lest you become a balgaiva and a show-off. So if you serve your brother properly as a young man, that will instill in you to never be a balgaiva, never to be a show-off. But we never find the Nasher once. Not one time does he ever go ahead and complain. So maybe we can, just through osmosis, through being around an environment, the Mishnah says of us, go l'makom Torah. The Brisa says in the end of Avos, if you give a person $1,000,000, any dar of a makom Torah, you'll only live in a makom Torah. And the Gemara tells us stories that as a baby, an Amora was brought into Beis Medrash. And he was the Amora that said that why by Hakel do we bring the children in? In order to give reward to the people that bring the children in. But he was the Amora that was brought in as a baby. It's through osmosis. And being by being shosik, simply being around Gedolei Torah. L'matati l'guf tov el mishnika, the Mishnah says in Amos. That he was around Talmidei Chacham, he was just quiet. He was a person, Menasheh, that was symbolic, that through osmosis, through living in an atmosphere of Torah, he himself became a Gadol Torah. And therefore, the person that was prosperous in the business world and gave a lot of stuff to himself became a Gadol Torah. Because that's what Menasheh symbolizes to us. That he had this ability to be in an atmosphere, put himself in the atmosphere, and grow and have this transformation from being the one that was known as the Gvir to one that was being known as the Torah leader that will live in the land of Eivar Yarden. Okay, everyone have a good Shabbos.